Hey, Emily, how are you doing?
Hi there, how are you?
Yeah, I'm well, thank you. So, look, first and foremost, what is life like for a folklorist?
Well, I think it's pretty precarious at the moment for folklorists, but it's okay for historians. So folklore at the moment isn't widely practiced in academic institutions or even in school or universities, but for about 30 or 40 years now, there have been folklorists, mostly who work out of community groups and sometimes attached to libraries and museums, who are working towards writing and collecting Australian folklore.
Yeah, right. So it's still quite a thriving, living field here in Australia?
Not so much in Australia. In some spaces, yes. So children's folklore in Australia has been, I suppose, a pioneering field of inquiry internationally as well. So there's been a lot of really great work on children's games and children's rhymes, children's slang and rude words and things like that, which have been collected in collections and published, and some children will read them. But less so in the academy. So it's not really practiced, I suppose, as a field of inquiry, really.
And I mean, you were mentioning that, you know, swear words or slang and that kind of thing is a really good example of what folklore can be. But what are some specific examples of Australian folklore beyond, say, you know, Waltzing Matilda or Ned Kelly?
Yeah, so I have a really big interest in children's folklore, and my own research engages with children's folk traditions. So those are the traditions, the rhymes, the games that we might play on the playground, but which often don't continue into our adult life. And we find that across generations, children will often play similar games. So good examples of that would be clapping games or skipping games. A lot of Australian kids might have played with knuckle bones or had rhymes, riddles or pranks that they had. I've got in front of me just at the moment, so there's an Oxford Companion to Australian Folklore, which is terrific because it has a lot of these examples of children's lore. And one classic example, which has been around for several decades now, is a rhyme about Captain Cook.
Yep.
And it runs like this. Captain Cook chased a chook all around Australia. He lost his pants in the middle of France and ended up in Tasmania.
I love that. I've definitely heard that one before as a kid.
Yeah, and there are heaps of different varieties, and we find it all over different children's playgrounds across Australia. I'm not sure in recent years, but definitely being traced right up until the 1990s, so it's a really good example of a playground rhyme that has continued.
Yeah, right. But so tell me a little bit more about, say, your work and what exactly you're doing when it comes to children's folklore, because you're studying it at the moment, aren't you?
I am. So I'm doing my PhD at the moment at the ANU in Canberra. This project started because I wanted to write a history of Australian children. I was interested particularly in writing a history of Australia that privileges the children's experience, which, you know, scholars have attempted to do and have looked at through folklore, but perhaps haven't written comprehensively about. And so my research kind of grows out of that particular ambition. So I write, for example, one of my chapters is about war play, so how children across the last 100, 200, 60,000 years have played at war. I also am interested in particular in children's bird rhymes, which might sound a little bit unusual, but
tell me more.
Really popular. Well, it started back in the early 20th century with the Gould League of Bird Lovers, which was a little organisation that kind of grew into an Australian-wide movement to get children passionate about birds. And probably some of your listeners will still have their Gould League certificates from as a child when they signed up to the movement. But that particular initiative produced a lot of children's art and children's drawings and writings in that period about birds. And so I'm very interested in how that developed and what children had to say about Australia's environment and landscape.
Yeah.
Across time.
Yeah, definitely. Now, I know that, you know, culture is dynamic, it's always evolving, but why do you think that it is so important to preserve our folklore throughout the histories? What kind of part does it play for us?
That is a very good question. There's not one place or one conversation I've had or one conference that I've been to where folklore hasn't proven itself to be relevant. And so it has something to say or something to tell us, to teach us about how we understand ourselves, what we have to say about ourselves, the stories that we tell, the myths that we make up about ourselves, the rhymes that we play on the playground and that we pass down to our children. They say something about what matters to us as Australians and what we think should matter to our children. And so I think folklore in that sense is very powerful as a lived tradition that continues still today. And we use all the time in our kitchens, in our bedrooms, you know, around in the office, on the street, to kind of talk about ourselves as Australians and as human beings. I think that's folklore's real power.
Yeah, definitely. And as you said, it is such an integral part of understanding our identity, both on an individual but collective level as well. And it endures so deeply.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, look, Emily, thank you so much for having a chat to us.